is up out there, everybody, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. That's right, it's me, Cam Hale. And as always in studio, I can't seem to get rid of him. He's like an ingrown toenail. He goes away and then he comes back again. But this way, he's fixing to be gone for a week. Mr. Kyle Villio-Vilson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm glad to be here in Skeleton Studios. I've been working like a dog, trying to cram 2 weeks' worth of work into 1 week. And I'm at the end of the week. I've got it all done. The last thing I have to do is the podcast. So I'm a little bit wore out. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a vacation. Me and my wife, we have never been on a vacation, just the two of us, since we started having children. Yes. So that's been 10 years. You know, time flies. The kids, they all look a little bummed out that we're not taking them with us. But yeah. I'm like, look, man, we need a little bit of break from the grind. I know I need a break from baseball and all that. And so we decided, let's go somewhere we've never been. And I promised, because I worked for a company, I know if you follow the show, then you're aware of this, but if you're not, I worked for a company doing my real estate work for 17 years, and I've been talking about quitting and starting my own company for a while, and I promised my wife if I ever did that, that I would take her on a vacation. So I did that in July, and so we kind of picked that up. Where's something we want to do? Where's somewhere else we want to go? I'm sorry. And we're outdoorsy people.
The forest of Endor.
Right. So we want to hike, and I was like, you know what? Sounds really fun. Why don't we go up to the Redwood Forest in Northern California and just do some hiking and stuff? So that's what we did. We just said, hey, that's as good a place as any. Let's not overthink it. Let's just go there first. Next year, we'll plan a trip somewhere else we've never been. In fact, she's already talking about next year. We want to go to the other opposite side of the country. We want to go up to Maine maybe and check that out. But yeah, so we're going to be flying into San Francisco. And then I know on the first day, we are going to drive down to San Jose and go to the Winchester House. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll be able to video or take some pictures of some ghosts there.
There you go.
That's another destination that would be pretty cool to check out. And then we're going to go north, and then we're just going to kind of hang out and do some pretty cool hiking. I'm sure I'll be posting photos on Instagram and Facebook. And
I heard next year she wanted to go with a new husband, though. She was tired of taking you places.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Unfortunately for her, though, her husband is the one that makes the money.
That's true. You're like, I got to take care of her. Yeah, we're doing this literally late this Saturday night. And we got to get done because Kyle leaves in a few hours to get on a plane. When I say a few hours, I mean like less than a handful. He's going to have to pack and he's going to have to try to catch an hour of sleep and then leave to get over there at 5 a.m. to be at the airport.
Yeah.
To check. Look, if y'all can see his face, it's amazing.
And when it comes to packing and stuff, this is a funny thing that happens with me and my wife. Every time we go anywhere is like she starts packing like 2 weeks out. And I don't pack to the last minute. And it kind of gives her anxiety. She starts freaking out. She's like, are you going to pack yet? I'm like, no, I'm not.
You do it on purpose now, don't you?
No, I just don't see the point.
Now you're a liar. You do it on purpose. You could pack early, but you're like, no.
I could, but then I might need some of the stuff that I pack, so then I have to unpack it. So why do twice the amount of work? I wait till the very last minute. I get a bag, or a suitcase in this case. I throw a couple pairs of underwear in there, a couple t-shirts, a couple socks, a toothbrush, a couple shirts, a couple pairs of pants, some shorts, some shoes. You're good.
Give me half a dozen of those naked lady tees. Give me one of those. Give me six of those.
Yeah. And another thing, if I do forget something, I'm always like, you know where we're going, they have stores, right? So if I run out of something, I'm sure I can stop and get something. I'm not that stressed out about it.
Yeah.
So
it's a vacay.
After we're done recording this, I'm going to pack my bags.
Yeah.
So what's been going on with you?
Dude, played some disc golf this morning, had a couple of rounds of disc golf. That's about it. Just been working. We were switching one of our systems over, and then there was also a slight leak at the our water plant.
Uh-oh.
Like, it's no big deal. It's just a little leak, and it's one of those on the raw water side. So we found it. I mean, it was one of those, it wasn't like it was hiding, but that's just been causing some stress in the system as far as all the guys I deal with and all. So my whole last week was just as crazy as yours. Like I said, I went back and forth to the lab. I can't even tell you how many times. So yeah, it's been pretty maddening. This whole week was crazy, but the greatest thing about it was we got to have a good friend of the show's come on and sit down to talk to y'all for this week. Mr. Mike Mays, the Texas Cryptid Hunter. Now we've had him on our very fourth. The fourth show we ever did, Mike came on, and then we've had him on before talking about his book, Patty, when he wrote the children's book.
That's right, yeah.
But we had him come on because Mike's been not just, of course, involved in wood ape, you know, research, but he is one of the guys that has never let go of, like, black cats. He is the guy that's, you know, that's one of those things, I guess. And we talk about it in the interview, and you'll hear us discussing it, is around here, it's not something that is, I guess you could, for the the lack of a better term, call it a cryptid animal, is I've never seen one, but I know tons of people that have, or that claim that they've had experiences or seen black panthers or black, you know, mountain lions, things like
that. Yeah, but yet here, the Texas Parks and Wildlife doesn't recognize it. They're saying, no, that's impossible. Yeah. When clearly it's not. I mean, there's photographs taken from game cameras, trail cameras, things like that, and numerous sightings all over the state, as well as like Oklahoma and Louisiana. And, you know, they have sightings even in like Arizona of other jaguars. So I'm always like, well, why is it impossible for a black cat to get up here from Central America? Because we know that cats have large territories.
Yeah.
Like one mountain lion may have like 100 square mile territory.
I think the thing that makes it hard, at least in my mind, is there's no species of all black. It has to be something that is genetic, like, you know, melanistic, almost like a fallow, but you're going to get the black. And I think that's the deal, is it's so rare, but yet there's so many accounts, it almost feels like it's another species. But anyway, look, folks, we get into it. Mike is a wonderful dude. I urge all y'all to go check it out, to go in and check out his blog, check out the NAWAC, dig into any and everything of that stuff. We get to talk to him about a lot of that. So we get into some crazy black cat talk. So when we get back from the break, we're not even going to beat around the bush, folks. We'll be chatting with Mike. Let's go ahead. Let's roll this puppy up, baby. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, guys, what is going on? We have got a great one for you today. To say this fella is a friend would be an understatement. We had him on the show for our very fourth show that we've ever done. We had him on a couple years ago talking about a book he had written. And he is a great friend of the show and a fella that puts in a lot of hard work. This is the Texas cryptid hunter, Mr. Mike Mays. Mike, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Man, it is good to chat with you. I always keep up with you on Facebook. I always watch about all the football stuff and all the stuff going through being a coach and all that stuff. And then how do you find time to do what you... People ask us, but I'm asking you. How do you find time to balance all this?
I'm not sure I really do. The blog has actually suffered quite a bit over the last couple of years. I have not been as inactive as the blog might indicate. I've been trying to keep everybody up on Facebook and Twitter and those things, just little snippets here and there. But with the teaching and the coaching and the especially during football season, it's pretty tough. I'm not gonna lie to you. So I'm really not sure how good a job I'm really doing, to be honest.
Well, it's enough to know that everybody needs to know that at least that you are about to publish another book. And it's not just over what we would all consider it being over. Most everybody thinks when they hear the Texas Cryptid Hunter or the NAWAC, the North American Wood Ape Conservancy, any of that, you start thinking of wood ape, Bigfoot, Sasquatch and things. But I remember you had touched base on some stuff a while back when we had spoke. We've had you on discussing a little bit of it, but you have really gone in depth over the Black Panther sightings that are reported here in our state. And it's something that's extremely interesting because we all know it's a real creature. We all know that there are mountain lions and there's panthers and then that there's also these black versions of them. But it seems that they're a lot more than maybe we realize, and a lot of people don't even want to acknowledge that they're out there. They'd laugh it off like that's not what people saw. So let's dig into that. Let's see, what have you been working on?
Well, we'll start with just the animal itself. You sound a lot like me and all of my relatives who grew up in East Texas who, black long-tailed cat was nothing. To say it's common would not have been accurate, but it was just another animal in the woods. You know, it was like a bobcat or a coyote or anything else. However, science disagrees with us on that, and there is technically no such animal recognized as a black panther. There's no such creature. As far as North American big cats, though, mountain lion, the Jaguar in rare instances. That's all that's really recognized as far as what might fall under the big cat umbrella. The Black Panthers you see in movies and on TV are either melanistic leopards, which are either African or Asian cats, or melanistic jaguars, which are starting to creep back into North America, but are really more Mexican, Central America, South American cats. There is no documented species that's considered a Black Panther. So, when someone talks about that to a wildlife agency, be it Texas Parks and Wildlife or whatever the state is, might be across the South, they get treated as if, they're reporting the unicorn sighting or something, because there's not supposed to be any such animal.
I guess it is. it would be really hard to wrap your head around if you've been taught, I guess, that it's not. But you're right. Is my dad would talk about it, and we had family members and friends of the family that would talk about seeing them. Like, I've never seen a mountain lion, but they would talk about seeing mountain lions, and they'd talk about seeing the black cats. So, like, yeah, we saw like a Black Panther or whatnot. And I know for a fact it's been, it was almost a year ago. It's in November, I believe, of 2016. Didn't they see one? I want to say in Arizona was it was a jaguar, not a black one. But they had trail cam footage of a jaguar in Arizona. So we know for a fact they're up in the United States. So it's one of those deals. So for them to be a colored, like you said, a species of it. But this, man, looking at some of these photographs, they don't necessarily resemble a black jaguar. They look more like a black mountain lion to me.
Yeah, and that's one thing we get into. I get into in the book. I give a little bit of historical perspective. We talk about some stories from the past, old newspaper reports, and semantics are important because. The way the animal's described in print is very telling. And I think you guys could probably attest to this. Here in the South and into the Southwest, when somebody says cougar, if we're talking about the animal, we're talking about the blonde, honey-colored, big, cat, the cougar, mm-hmm. The mountain lion, the puma. There are various names for it, but when the word panther is used, 99% of the time, that person's talking about a black cat. Mm-hmm. And the one area where that is the exception might be in Florida, where the Florida panther is a pretty highly publicized endangered species there. And the public in that area, especially South Florida, has been educated quite a bit on the plight of the Florida panther. It's been struggling to survive. And even the hockey team that moved down there took on the name Panther, and they've got a golden-colored cat. But any other mascot anywhere that you see, they're using Panther. It's black. The Carolina Panthers, the Pitt Panthers, these are great examples. And most people, when they use that term, they're talking about, the black animal. Some of these old newspaper clippings, they use terms like Mexican tiger or Mexican lion. Those were terms that were used to describe jaguars back in the day. They used the term wildcat. That equates to a bobcat. And then they use the term panther, and sometimes they'll use them in the same sentence. There's one old report that talks about a calf that was killed, and they suspected it was either a Mexican tiger, a wildcat, or a panther. So you're talking about three different names used in the same sentence, and they're differentiating between three different species there in the way that's written. So that's interesting. Then we go into some modern, some stuff recently over the last, 40, 50 years, including some very recent ones. I just get reports on a weekly basis, and a lot of those are going to be in this book. People are seeing something, and then we get into, okay, well, what are the possibilities here? What are our suspects? And we get into that.
Well, is there certain areas, I guess, that would be more of a hot spot of what, because you would think of them in, when I always think of mountain lions, I always think about them kind of out in the west or the Big Bend area, and even up in this part of North Texas where it kind of rolls and all that. But I know that there's been several sightings in and around the Metroplex. Like, it's because, I don't know if it's easy food, easy table fare for them, or what it is, but I guess when I think of that, I don't think of a panther, mountain lion, or anything. I picture bobcats. I mean, I've seen bobcats in downtown Fort Worth. So, I mean, I can imagine that, but I can't imagine a cat like that slipping around in a subdivision somewhere. But you've received, like, some accounts from where they've been on the edges of these subdivisions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's actually, Collin County, Denton County, that whole Plano area, Lake Ray Roberts, lots of there. And you're right. It certainly is not what you would, it's not what you would first picture, as far as prime habitat. But the interesting thing about the Metroplex, while it has sprawled out quite a bit, it's almost like the old frontier. When you hit the edge of it, man, then there's nothing for miles. And there are lots of creeks, riparian areas, green belts that run through the city. The Trinity River runs right through the heart of everything. Anything that was moved mainly at night, nocturnal, could likely get through there without being seen if it didn't want to. As far as, why so many sightings, I don't think that they're necessarily more of them there, but for a sighting to occur, there are two factors that must be present. One is the animal and the other is someone to see it. And so you get out into East Texas where it's lightly populated, there are going to be fewer sightings because there are fewer people. Mm-hmm. One little pet theory I've had for a long time, and you mentioned the bobcats that have become very urban. One of the things I discovered while researching for this book was that I found very interesting was over in India. They did a study. They collared some leopards that were considered problem animals because they were living basically in town. Right in a pretty major metropolitan area. They took them, they hauled them off and relocated them, and there were five of them that they did that to, and every one of them came back, and they were not only they were not transients, they weren't passing through, they were living in what would equate to the city limits over here of this town, this big metropolitan town in India. They were rarely seen. They weren't man eaters that had interest in people. They were picking off pets and livestock from time to time, but they were procreating. There was at least one litter of cubs that was born. They were doing just fine in a very urban environment. So it's possible that some of these bigger species, like a mountain lion, or might have finally caught on and they're starting to adapt the way coyotes did, the way bobcats have. They're starting to do a little better in closer proximity to people. And the other part of that is, there are a lot of run down, all but abandoned areas in some of these larger, cities where, warehouse districts and overgrown, just kind of, like I said, just kind of abandoned areas where the bobcats and the coyotes and feral dogs and things are roaming around, and they're just full of rodents and rabbits and possums and all kinds of stuff that, quite frankly, a big cat, while he may not stay there forever, he could do, I think, just fine for, period of couple weeks. And again, moving at night in this sparsely populated area of town may not be seen at all. This urban cat theory is something that I've become very interested in. And, like you said, the bobcats almost become a common visitor mm-hmm. in you know, Fort Worth, Dallas, Houston. For Pete's sakes, they had a coyote on top of a roof in New York City a couple years ago. Nobody's quite sure how he managed to do that. So, you know, if they can do it, you would think the big cat could do it as well, at least on a limited basis.
Well, it's one of those, like I said, it's one of those things. It's just in my head is because you always think about them being more stealthful. And I'm sure that I've been in the woods with them, close to them. And just because I've seen the tracks, I've heard them call, all that stuff. I've just never witnessed one. But I knew they were there. You know, you just, you can always hear them. You know that they're out there and things like that. But it just, something about it strikes you as like they're never going to want to come around the city. But that's not true. I think it's something I have to get over, because I mean, we laugh all the time driving through town here where we live, is you have to be on the lookout for white-tailed deer running through town. Right down the road from my house, almost run over some, when I say down the road, I'm like a block around the corner, there was turkey. You had to honk and get the turkey out of the road. So if those are there, then big cats are going to be there too, because, well, they eat them. That's just kind of how this whole thing works out. Then, like we talked about with coyotes grabbing, you know, house cats,
and you know, sure. And you know, the thing is, they're going to have to, in some cases, adapt, or they're just not going to survive. So, I'm not sure the situation is tenable long term if they are living in more urban environments, at least on occasion. I'm not sure that's going to be tolerated by people.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see where there might be a process starting where, you know, these species are having to adapt at least somewhat in some areas to the presence of more people. And, you know, hopefully there's going to be a way where people and the cats can survive in fairly close proximity without, you know, anything bad happening. But, you know, it's interesting. And again, that's one of the things in the book we talk about is we go in depth on that leopard study over in India. And, you know, if one species of you know, fairly comparable in size can do it, there's really no reason to think it could not happen here. I you know, and you know, you go out west, you know, we had a mountain lion roamed right into downtown El Paso. They end up having to shoot it at a car wash. Happens in California all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And there are numerous, you know, a cougar was shot in Chicago, for Pete's sakes, a while back. And they roam over long areas. They have really big ranges. And like I said, some of these bigger cities are built on major waterways, rivers, and such, and with big green belts that, you know, abut them, and these things kind of just, as we all know, creeks and rivers are kind of wildlife corridors for movement. And I can see some maybe just passing through, but they kind of get caught. So, you know, I don't think it's as unlikely a scenario as a lot of people might assume. Like I said, I'm not saying it's something that's happening all over all the time, but at the same time, I don't think it's something that's never happening, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this then, since you've talked to, you know, some of the wildlife biologists and things and done the research where they claim that there are no black cats, there's no, unless there's some melanistic version of them, there's no black cats. What could they possibly be unless they are? Of course, this is going to be the crazy conspiracy mind of mine. Do they know that there are species and maybe that they are in the decline or something where they don't really have enough evidence of them, or that they do have evidence of them and they just don't want to add them for some crazy reason?
I don't think that is true with the whole Black Panther kind of phenomenon. I'll use that as kind of a catch-all phrase. I think there are several possibilities as to what people are seeing. The fact of the matter is there has never been a documented case of a melanistic mountain lion ever anywhere. And, you know, I understand what the mainstream scientists are saying. Look, as many as we have in captivity and breeding and we'd have had one somewhere by now. If they carried the genetics for melanism, it would have exhibited itself at some point by now. So I understand their doubt. There are, however, some pretty interesting historical accounts. There's a pretty well circulated photo of a cat, it's clearly a cougar, mountain lion, that was killed in Costa Rica. I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, it was 1959, and it's a black and white photo. But it is an extremely dark cat, extremely dark. You can't tell, is it just a really deep kind of chocolate brown, or is it truly black because of the nature of the photograph? But it's very intriguing. There are reports going further back, some naturalists in particular. There was a gentleman, last name of Buffon, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. He was French, came over here and was cataloging animals in the New World, and he cataloged an animal called the cougar noir. And again, my accent's probably just brutal, but it was supposed to glossy black on the dorsal surfaces and much lighter cream colored to light gray underneath, you know, the inside of the legs, the belly, the muzzle. It sounds very much like a cougar, only black. And that was something, you know, he was among the most respected wildlife guys in the world at that time. And he documented that in his writings. But there is no carcass, there is no pelt, there's no photographs that are absolute 100% documentation of a melanistic cougar. And there's a problem with it anyway, because cougars are two-toned. They're, you know, honey-colored, blonde, and they range in how dark they get. But they're two-toned. Their underside, their ventral surfaces are white or cream-colored. They're two-toned. And the reports we get, almost without exception, are of solid black animals. They're not lighter on the underside. They're not lighter around the muzzle. Sometimes people claim they can see faint spots on them if the light hits them just right, but they're not saying that they're getting that that two-tone look like you would expect in a true mountain lion.
And the Texas Parks and Wildlife, their official position is that these black cats do not exist in Texas. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But yet, you know, like you mentioned, you get dozens a month of sightings. And I've looked at your website for years now, and there's game camera footage. There's snapshots people have gathered. I wonder why so many people are seeing these black cats, but yet the Texas Parks and Wildlife says that no, it can't be. They don't exist. Do you think
the Parks and Wildlife, in 2005, I saw a cougar in the Sam Houston National Forest. It crossed a Forest Service road. It was me and a friend of mine, was late at night, and it just made a road crossing, just kind of slunk across the road. Long tail, typical colored mountain lion. I mean, there's no doubt what it was. It was probably no more than 15 yards in front of the vehicle. And there was absolutely no doubt about what it was. And saw a ranger the next day and reported it to him. And, you must be mistaken. You must have seen a bobcat. And, you know, naturally a little bit offended. I'm like, no, I know what a bobcat looks like. And this thing had a tail that was almost as long as its whole body. He says, well, we don't have cougars in these woods. So that there's a real reluctance to even admit or acknowledge that there are regular colored mountain lions in East Texas, much less anything as unusual as a black species of cat of some kind. Now, that was 2005. Maybe if I talk to somebody down there today, it's been a while, maybe they're a little more open to it. But back at that time, all they just as far as a breeding population of mountain lion, was basically West Texas or deep, deep South Texas along the Mexican border was, you know, the Trans-Pecos area and down along the border were the only areas where it was accepted that there was an active breeding population of lions. And that's just, in my opinion, that's never been true. I know they were hunted to the brink of extirpation, you know, in the East, but I don't think they've ever been completely gone, and they're still there now.
I am just, it's one of those things that feels weird because I was always raised, I guess it's one of those things, like if you was raised up, if your family had had a sighting of Bigfoot or an alien sighting or anything like that. My father had seen several mountain lions, but he had talked about the Black Panthers like it was just an everyday thing. It was just...
Well, back home it is. I mean, these people, they don't know there's not supposed to be any such thing. You know, I mean, let's face it, most folks are too busy going about their daily business, trying to make a living and pay the bills, than worry about what some guy in a white lab coat is telling them is real or isn't. So when you tell them, hey, you know, there's not supposed to be any such thing, what do you mean? You know, you get the, I know what I saw, and ain't nobody going to tell me what I saw, and they're ready to fight. They're ready to fight you right there because you're impugning their honor and integrity and their sanity. And, you know, I was the same way. I was well into my 30s before I realized that there's no such thing according to mainstream science.
Well, if you even go to on the Texas Parks and Wildlife's website, it will tell you that contrary, this is what it reads, contrary to popular belief, there are no Black Panthers in Texas.
Right.
And you're like, it's crazy because I'm like, look, I've never seen one, but there we have photographs. We have listeners that have contacted us to get in touch with you before. We've gotten stories about them. All this where people have had this like, no, that's exactly what I saw.
I hate to slam them too much in one sense because, look, science demands a body.
Mm-hmm,
that's all there is to it. You know, a picture will never be good enough. And we've had that discussion talking about other species before. But no piece of photography, no film, no video, no photograph is ever going to be enough to justify the documentation of a new species even if it's not a new species, a novel, possibly subspecies or something along those lines. You're going to have to put one on a slab, and that's unfortunate in one way, but that's what science demands. They demand a type specimen, a holotype, and until that happens, you know, it's not going to be accepted. Photographs will always be doubted. Eyewitness accounts, you know, they're good enough to send somebody to death row, but they're not good enough to get someone to think that there might be a big cat of some kind roaming around. You know, it's kind of an ironic situation, but, that's just the way it is. And like I said, there has been no documented case of melanism in cougars. Jaguars are extremely rare, or thought to be extremely rare anyway. And so, you know, they're assuming misidentification and, like I said, there are some possible suspects that, people might be seeing from time to time that, are making them jump to this panther conclusion. We talk about that in the book. You know, we talk about mountain lions as a potential suspect. We talk about jaguars. There's a real interesting case we made about the possibility of a relic population of jaguars maybe getting cut off from Mexican jaguars and the allele, the gene for melanism in jaguars is dominant. So if you are breeding with If they're breeding with other melanistic cats, you know, eventually you're going to stop seeing the spotted coats in that isolated population. They could become all but exclusively black, you know. So that's an interesting argument that you could, or interesting theory, I guess I should say. There's a smaller, kind of odd looking cat called a Jaguarundi that most people do not know exists. In most cases, they're not much bigger than domestics, but they are kind of otter shaped. They're odd looking. They're long bodied, very long tails, kind of a flat head that they can easily give you the impression they're longer than they are. And some of them do get bigger than the domestics. But one of the things that really interested me is what's going on in Australia. They're having a big controversy over there about big black cats as well. Australia's got all kinds of wildlife. Most of it wants nothing more than to kill and eat you over there. But they've never had a native species of big cat over there. There's not an indigenous species of cat in Australia, and yet they're having all these sightings. And the dominant theory over there is that they are the descendants of ferals, and that these ferals, for some reason, are growing to abnormally large sizes over there. They're growing just regular domestic cats, basically, that have been feral for several generations, and they're growing to be the size of small leopards. You know, 50 pounds. And somebody sees a 40 or 50 pound cat, they're not thinking domestic cat. They're thinking, you know, a big cat of some kind. And the most famous example, a guy named Kurt Engel shot what he thought was a panther. It was tested, and the DNA came back as Felis catus, which is just domestic cat. It was just a feral cat, but it was enormous. You know, it was 6 feet long from the nose to tail. And why that's happening over there, lots of theories to that, but there's some really strong anecdotal evidence that that's exactly what's going on over there. And I think that is at least a possibility for some of the visuals over here, because we have a real feral cat problem in this country. Every little municipality across the country has got a dog catcher. We're set up to deal with stray dogs, but we're doing nothing about stray cats. Nothing. And they're roaming, and they're responsible for quite a lot of damage to wildlife, and especially birds. And there's nothing really to keep them in check. I think if it could be happening in Australia, it's a distinct possibility that it could be happening over here as well. And, you know, you get into all kinds of possibilities. You know, we talk about, you know, so Jaguarundi, the big ferals, possible hybridization when ferals get to a certain size with, you know, say the big feral couples with a bobcat. Well, now you've got the genetics for a long tail and melanism in this new this hybrid cat that's out there, and it's going to be bigger than a normal cat, and that's going to take people off guard. And then, you know, you get the old classic standby escaped exotics and pets that have been turned loose and things like that. So we cover all that stuff in the book. And it really is interesting. And I'm not sure there's any one answer. I think it's very likely a combination of all of the above.
It's still something that it's crazy to think of, that there's like that running around and that people are seeing it. It still makes you start thinking about Bigfoot. It always does when you bring it up. Are there any sightings that you can share with us right quick? And one that in particular that you really enjoyed, or something that about that sighting that kind of caught you to really kind of sunk in?
You're talking about the cats?
Yeah, the cat.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the, I guess one of the more intense sightings that that really hooked me and got me interested. There's a lady that lives in Ellis County, Texas, out not too far from Waxahachie. And matter of fact, she lives right on Waxahachie Creek. And she has horses. And she was out. It was cold. Now, this is going back several years now. It's maybe 6-7 years ago now. And she went out to, I think she was pulling some alfalfa out for the horses late at night. It was real cold, so she was trying to take care of them. And she had this stuff in a metal horse trailer, so she opened it up and was making quite a bit of noise. And I don't think they'd been on the property very long. There was kind of an overgrown area and not too far from where they had this trailer. And she started to hear something, the way she described it, is charging her. And it was tearing through the brush and growling and carrying on, and it broke through the brush. And there was a trough, a metal horse trough, between her and the animal. And what she described is just a great big black, jet black cat came barreling out of the brush and pulled up about 10 feet from her, and between, and the trough was between her and it. And, you know, she started to back up. She yelling at, get out of here, get out of here. She's backing up, putting her hands up, waving them around and stuff. She was not armed at the time. And this thing just, you know, growled and pawed at her. You know, you've seen them kind of swipe, you know, their paws and stuff. And then, she got back far enough where she made a run back to the house, and this thing, you know, disappeared. Now, you know, bluff charges are something I've seen in other animals. I'm not sure how common that might be in cats, if at all. I don't know if I've ever heard of that. But she was backed up a few days later. Her fiance that was living there as well was out and saw big black cat. At walking the fence line, not too far from the area where she had her encounter. And, you know, this guy's a veteran. She's a school teacher. These are level headed, normal, really non kooky people, you know, and to have both of them claim visuals within days of each other is pretty intriguing. And this is a spot where I've had game cameras up off and on for the better part of 4 or 5 years now. And I got some real interesting shots, including cats. You know, some they've been all bobcats so far, but and one maybe of something dark with a long tail, but it's so fleeting. It's hard to say. You know, I never even published it because it's, you know, you just can't tell for sure. But that was a pretty intense one. There's another sighting. Actually, it was years and years ago, but the guy recounted it to me just recently. Of he was hunting out in Hill County and was hunting a creek bed, and he had kind of set up, had a .22 rifle, not looking for anything big, and something comes through the brush and walks down to the bottom of the dry creek bed. And he called it a black cougar. It's exactly how, those are his words. And, he had his rifle, you know, the stock was seated on his shoulder there, ready to take a shot. And as it came out, he'd never seen anything like that before. He kind of lowered his rifle, maybe sat up a little, and that movement caught the cat's eyes. And it, he said it started to kind of get its back legs underneath it, kind of tensing like it was about to jump at him. And so he took a couple shots. He's positive he hit it at least once, screamed and howled like a, you know, like a woman being murdered is the term he used. And it ran off, and he ran off, and he went home and got a bigger gun and came back. And of course he never found anything. So, so there are some, kind of intense encounters out there. Most are very fleeting, you know, road crossings, a glimpse of a cat. You know, I've got several where people drove up at night and there's just a cat laying on the hood of their, or the top of their other vehicle, just sitting there swishing its tail, looking at them, and it just hops off and saunters away. You know, wow. So you've got all kind of, quite a mix of different kinds of visuals.
Wow. Well, what is the name of, do you have a name picked out for this book yet?
Yeah, I think we're going to call it Shadow Cats. The Black Panthers of North America, I believe is going to be our title. And, we're looking at January on the optimistic end and February of 2018, worst case as far as it coming out. It's being published through Anomalist Books. You guys are probably familiar with Lyle Blackburn and his stuff, same publisher, and that does Lyle stuff and many more folks. And we're, you know, excited about it. And we've got a whole chapter dedicated to pictures that people have taken and sent in to me. And, you know, there's some interesting one. It's very interesting. Was a study in Canada. They got a game camera photograph of a Black Panther. I mean, there it is, big as day. It's right there. It was described in the study as a black jaguar. It was taken in Ontario, though. Now, you tell me that's not a strange place to find a tropical cat like a jaguar.
Yeah.
It's described in the study in amazingly nonchalant terms. It just says, oh, here's a picture of a melanistic jaguar outside of Ontario. And that's all, it's nothing else is even mentioned. The study was about mountain lions, and by golly, that's all they were going to talk about. And it was just kind of put down as someone's escape pet. And that was it. But I mean, so there's all kinds of really cool photographs in it that cover the gambit of the possible suspects. So it was a lot of fun to do. It was a lot of work, and we had talked earlier before we came on about my schedule, and it took far longer to do than it probably should have. And but finally got through it, and pretty excited about it, and pleased with how it came out. Actually,
well, I can't wait to check it all out. This is something that's always kind of fascinating to get off on this little side run and check all this stuff out. Mike, if they want somebody, one of the listeners wants to send you an encounter that they had or something goes along with these, where can they find all this, and where are they going to be able to get all your books and all that?
Okay, well, first things first, contact. You can contact me. It's TexasCryptidHunter@yahoo.com. And if you can't remember that, you can just look for the Texas Cryptid Hunter blog. There's a link there's in the margin over there. It gives my email address. You can contact me that way. I would say if you're wanting to go into details and you're wanting a reply, then I need you to send an email. A lot of folks they'll read a post, a story, you know, on the blog, and then they'll hit the comments section. And they'll leave a comment with their experience or whatever. But almost without exception, comments left are filed under anonymous. And I can't reply to a comment directly. So if you're wanting a response from me, I need you to send an email at the TexasCryptidHunter@yahoo.com. As far as where the books will be available, the Anomalous books page, and I will certainly have a link on the blog and you know that you can click that should take you directly there. But it's going to be available anywhere, you know, books are going to be sold, the Amazons, the Barnes and Nobles, and Books a Million, and all those spots should be carrying it once it comes out.
That'll be perfect. Well, we can't wait to read it. We're glad that you've put it all down and built a book out of it. It'll be something to go back and check out. Mike, thank you so very much for coming on and spending the evening here with us. And we'll let you get back to it so you can at least catch up on some of this downtime that hopefully you've got.
Yeah, downtime. Yeah, that's right. Now it's time to go do the honey juice.
That's right. So,
but I appreciate you guys having me on. It's always a pleasure.
It was great, Matt. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Thank you.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I love Mike Mays. I love talking to him, the Texas Cryptid Hunter. He does a lot of fantastic work. His blog is amazing. If you go in there, it's just hundreds of sightings.
It's awesome, and he has it for everything, yeah. And he admits that he hasn't He hasn't kept it up to speed like he wanted to because of with
work and stuff.
Work. Yeah. And that's right. He is he's a teacher, and he is one of the men that guide the young men under the Friday Night Lights here in Texas. He's a high school football coach. So, yeah, Mike has a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah, and he was recently on a television show, the Low Files. If you watch Rob Lowe and his series with his two boys when they go up to Oklahoma and the Wichita Mountains.
Yep. If y'all are elite members, you're going to get to hear that. Mike hung around, and we got to talk about the Low Files. We got to talk about a lot of other Bigfooty stuff with Mike. And so we're like, hey, let's just stick it on the Elite. So for the Elite this week, you're going to get to hear that on Friday. So you'll get to hear some wild Bigfoot stories and stuff with Mike and Rob and all of his kids.
That's right. Yeah, and I'll put links to his website and blog and things in the show notes. And also, I have to bring this up since we're talking about it, the links and stuff. For those of you who have done the new iPhone update,
it's got
a completely new look, and so I am messing around myself trying to figure out how to navigate through the podcast section that where the show notes are and things like that. It's all different for those of you that are purchasing the new iPhone 8 or 10, or I've just done the update on an older phone. You'll know what I'm talking about. So if you have any problems, bear with me because I'm the host of the show and I'm having problems trying to navigate it. But I'm sure if you get in there's probably people that are way smarter than me that can figure it out. But if you have any tips, please send them to the show. You can email stories of your own or news or anything like that to the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. You can follow us on all forms of social media. And if you want to get Elite, don't forget, you can sign up for that. It's $5 a month. You'll get an additional show every Friday, as well as access to the entire back catalog. You just have to go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, and click on the Elite tab. Signing up is easy. Cam, we got some exciting fights tonight before we get out of here.
Yeah. They're going on right now, so we're going to have to get some stuff knocked out.
I'm going to ask you real quick, what's your prediction on the main event, Michael Bisping versus George St. Pierre?
Bisping all day.
I think so, right? It's not that George is not a great fighter, but everybody knows who's a big fan of the sport, that when you take off for 4 years, man, the sport can really pass you by.
Anything will pass you by if you quit doing it for 4 years. Now, he didn't quit training, of course. He did all that. But when you're not in the thick of things, and it seems to be fighting is one of those things. Anything that is man-on-man combat like that, as far as like wrestling and jiu-jitsu and all that stuff, I mean, it's like you can take a little time off in baseball and then come back and play baseball, but something about that, the lights and the, I don't know, it just, we've seen too many people that, you know, it almost also seems like fight cardio is different than training cardio, so I want to see how this works.
Well, and I'm wondering about that because George is fighting at a heavier weight.
Mm-hmm.
He's older by 4 years. He hasn't fought in 4 years. And Bisping, man, that guy's got amazing cardio.
He doesn't get tired.
He doesn't get tired.
And he can take abuse and not get tired.
And he's one of the best, even because George does have a good double leg and stuff like that. But Michael is amazing at getting up. He can back his way up a cage like nobody.
Reminds you of Chuck, don't it?
He's very good at that. And, you know, and if George, you know, George has a good jab, or at least he did. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting, but I do think I give the edge to Michael because Michael, for whatever reason, he seems to be fighting better and better as time goes on.
Yeah,
I mean, he's
wild.
A much better fighter now than he was 8 years ago.
Yeah, it's wild. I love watching that. Speaking of that, this Friday, this coming Friday, I will be at Gilly's in Dallas to watch the Honey Sloth try to go for his move that we've named. So I've bet the tattoo on him. But so if he gets the submission, the twister in the match, I have to get a tattoo of a sloth. And I was talking to him today, matter of fact, and he wanted to give me a heads up. So a big shout out to Dakota Ranello and Miss Shelby for new parents to be.
Oh, really?
They will have a baby this summer. This coming June, they will probably end up with a baby.
Well, congratulations.
So congrats. It's amazing. And something else. We were nominated, and I shared it on Facebook. There's a link on Facebook, if y'all are following us, that you can go to, that is a Google Docs link that you can go and nominate us for some kind of award.
Okay.
You know, and put it all in. I wished I knew more about it, but Kyle and I, we put it up there. We're like, okay, if y'all want to do it, it'd be awesome. We don't really know much more about it other than that. It's something we don't keep up with, but it would be awesome to win some kind of award. And last but certainly not least, thank y'all all so much for taking the time out to write reviews. All the new folks that have found it, I would love to give you a shout out, and I would love to go back and listen, but to be 100% honest with y'all, I think I'm about 150 names back, and y'all piled it on so much. I've read, look, you're written when I told you don't have to say anything nice. Just give me 5 stars. That's all I'm asking. And, but if you want to say I got a tank of gas, and y'all did it. There are reviews that said I bought a tank of gas, 5 stars. Let's go. Look, we're bumping up there about 600 almost now. Like we're just a handful shy of 600. Please, folks, whether you have it or not, what it does for us is it's the only way that Apple will recognize it in iTunes. So as reviews come in, it doesn't matter for downloads. It doesn't matter for that. We could have hundreds of thousands of downloads. It does not matter because without the reviews, the show will not be noticed in the top page there whenever you the new and noteworthy or however it is when you click it on. So the reviews are the best way to help us out. Tremendously. So even if you don't have an iTunes account and you don't want to download it, but you know somebody else that does, well, just go use theirs.
Yeah,
say, right. Let me borrow your iTunes account. I want to leave a review. Whatever you want to do. This time, if you want to say, I got a new pair of shoes, just be like, Daddy's got a new pair of shoes, or Mama, or whoever. Just they got a new pair of shoes. Or tell us that you hate Christmas music, because they're starting to play Christmas music about this point, and I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of Christmas music until it's Christmas time. I don't need it in November.
Yeah, but it's almost here.
You know, it's yeah, and I could almost be 6 foot tall, but I'm not. not even close. But folks, for all of you that written reviews, I will try to do my best to go back and start calling out some. I really will. But thank y'all all so much. Yeah. It means a whole lot to us. And thanks again to Mike for coming on and spending his time with us. It means so much to us to just have friends like that out there. Y'all are all so great. I don't even know, man. It's one of those things. I really feel lucky to get to chat with all y'all.
I do too, but I got to be going, so I got to wrap this show up for you. Elite members, we'll be talking to you again on Friday, where we'll have a continuation of our interview with Mike Mays. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Kyle, stay out of trouble on your flat. Peace.